Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio, and today my guest is Karen Ford, and she is a master financial coach. She's a public speaker, an entrepreneur, and a best-selling author who has coached people with a wide variety of money issues, anywhere from $500 of debt to $800,000 in debt. And I got to tell you, I know that one. She has coached folks with up to 86 credit cards and taught them how to pay down and pay off those credit cards in record time. Karen's mission is to inspire others to rid themselves of debt and to build wealth. She encourages others to break the shackles of debt and gives valuable insight into building wealth so they can experience financial freedom. Karen Ford's number one best-selling book, Money Matters, is a discovery for many. This book is not only motivational, but it's also practical. Karen, I'm so delighted to have you on the show today to share much of your expertise and mastery with the very popular and serious topic of money. Welcome to Living Above the Drama.
Thank you so much, Georgiana. It's my pleasure. I'm going to really enjoy this time with you.
Well, I enjoyed my time with you when we did the pre-interview. And boy, I got to tell you, you are one busy lady. So I would love for you. We're going to talk about your book, Money Matters, and we're going to talk about you being a real estate investor. You like buying, selling, and flipping properties, and I got a kick out of the fact that you've bought properties for as little as $10.
Yes, and those are really fun.
We want to talk about that. But before we do, let's talk about how you got into, because you're a nurse, I believe, correct?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Yes, you are a nurse who, tell us about your nursing, and then tell us how you segued into financing. It's very interesting.
Certainly. Well, I'm a registered nurse, but I haven't practiced as a nurse for several years. And while I was practicing as a nurse, a friend of mine said, "Karen, you are so good with numbers and money. I think it would be a great idea for you to go and get some further training in the financial arena and become a financial coach." So I did. I went and received some training and became a master financial coach, and I absolutely love it. So I actually transitioned from being a nurse to being a master financial coach, and I kind of look at it like this. As a nurse, I helped people get healthy physically, but as a master financial coach, I help people get healthy financially. So I'm still helping people, and actually it's just as important as taking care of ourselves physically, because money issues or stress can really affect the body.
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I alluded to the fact that I carried an enormous business debt for about 15, 20 years. And Karen, when it was over, oh, my Lord.
Relief, right?
Relief, yeah. So tell us about some of your story, some of your clients. And, you've got so much to share, so please feel free to jump right in, okay?
Okay, absolutely. Well, the one couple, I know people, their ears are perked because of the 86 credit cards. So I'll start with that story first. I was coaching a couple for the very first time, husband and wife, and they came to see me and I asked a series of questions so I could gather information. And I thought that I had listed all of their debts. I said, "Are there any other debts?" And they said, "Yes, we have some credit cards." So I said, "Okay, give me the names of the credit cards, the monthly payment, and the balances." So we went through that list, and then I said, "Is there anything else?" And she had a deer in the headlight moment. Her eyes got really large, and she said, "Well, actually, I have some credit cards that he doesn't know about."
Oh, Lord.
That was not good. And I said, "Okay," so we listed those and the monthly payments. And then he said, "I have have some credit cards that she doesn't know about.
Wow. Well, that's a real intimate marriage, isn't it?
Well, it could have been World War III, to be quite honest.
I know, yeah.
But I said, okay, so we listed those, and then I just looked at both of them, and I said, look, I said, all the cards are on the table now, so there's no sense in fighting over this. You were wrong for not telling him. You were wrong for not telling her. But now everything's on the table. So what we want to do now is we want to move forward with, you know, demolishing this debt. So we need to take those necessary steps. When it was all said and done, between the two of them, they had 86 credit cards. And every one of those credit cards had a balance. Every one of them had a balance on them.
Oh, my Lord.
Yes, that's what I said. And then
wow.
I said, you know, sometimes when I tell people that story, they say, wow, how come the credit card companies gave these people those credit cards
knowing that
they had that many? And my answer is truly, the credit card companies know they're going to get their money. They're going to make money. And those credit cards the interest rate ranged anywhere between 8% all the way up to 33.3%.
Yep.
And my heart really went out to them. But at the same time, you know, I do place some blame towards them because obviously their spending was really out of control. But also the credit card companies, they know that when somebody takes their credit card, more times than not, they're going to end up charging on that card. Otherwise, why would you put it in a safe place for emergencies or put it in a place where just in case or whatever? Well, we all know that emergencies are going to arise. We all know that just in case scenarios, occurrences, you know, happen. So literally, you know, I have to place blame on both, not just the credit card companies, because if we accept it, we take it out, you know, we also have a little bit of blame in that. But, you know, both are at fault. Yes, the credit card companies probably should not have given them the credit cards knowing that they had that many. And they should have known, you know what, I don't need another credit card. I already have 50 or 60 or whatever number it was by the time they were getting up to 86, to be quite frank with you. But they, you know, I went over the necessary steps. They started on the correct path to reach the goal. And so I think they're down to 30 credit cards now, the balances. And I always tell people, look, you know, if you're going to have a credit card, okay, cash is always better. And most places when you're needing to use a credit card will accept a debit card. I understand there may be situations. Maybe you're trying to gather points on a card for airline miles. I understand that. But certainly we don't need 10, 15, 20, you know, however many credit cards. So that was that story. And then I actually coached another couple, a very young couple. Both were working, and they had a little three-year-old little girl. And I asked a series of questions, and I said, I got to the food part, the grocery part, and there was a little bit of squirreliness there. And I looked at them. I said, do you all do meal planning or anything? And they said, no. And I said, how often do you go to the grocery store? And they said, oh, about every 2 or 3 days to pick up what we need. I said, ah, okay. So in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, we've got a little issue here. And I said, do you go out to eat to a restaurant? They said, yes. How often do you do that? Oh, 2 or 3 times a week. I said, okay, how much does that cost you? And then I said, do you take your lunch to work? Do you bag your lunch? No. They pay, you know, they buy their lunch in the cafeteria at work. So when it was all said and done, they didn't know how much they were spending on food every month. But by the time we got done with that information, they were spending $1,500 a month. Now, this is a husband, a wife, and a 3-year-old. And that is way too much. And so when they found out they were spending $1,500 a month, I looked at them and I said, do you want to do anything about this? And they both said, yes. So then they decided they would go out to eat once a week. They would begin brown bagging their lunch to work, except on Fridays they would eat in the cafeteria. And they decided to do some meal planning and go to the grocery store once a week. They cut their grocery bill from $1,500 a month down to $600 a month.
Wow.
So they had an additional $900 they could put in savings, they could put towards debt, or they could invest. So that was a real win in that situation as well, Georgiana.
Wow, that's quite the story. Now, did you do a follow-up on them recently? How are they doing? Are they sticking to it? Are they having any problems with it?
They are sticking with it, actually. They like the fact that they're not overspending in that food area. You know, they still get to go out to eat. They still, you know, I think sometimes people, when they think of a financial coach or a financial planner or somebody that's going to tell them what to do with their money, I think sometimes people have the mindset or the concept, no, I don't want to go see them because I don't want to just eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches the rest of my life and never
right,
get to go
right.
out to eat. But the point of the matter is, I'm not going to tell you to do that. You're in control of your money. I'm just another pair of eyes and someone that's going to coach you in that area. Here's another example. I coached a young man. I think he was 26 or 27 years old. He was pretty good with money, actually, and he didn't have very much debt. But I knew something is sucking this money away here. What is this? And I said, I just looked at him and I said, do you drink coffee? And he said, yeah. And I said, do you make your coffee at home or do you get it somewhere else? And he said, oh, no, I get my latte every day on my way to work. I drive through. And I said, ah, okay. How much does that cost you each time you get your coffee? And so he told me, long story short, he was spending $330 a month on that specialty coffee.
Well,
because
yeah.
he was getting it every day on his way to work. Am I telling you not to drink coffee? Absolutely not. I am a coffee guzzling person myself. But I'm not going to spend $330 a month on, you know, a specialty coffee. It's nice to have it as a treat. You know, sometimes if you set it up as a treat once a week or twice a week, it's special to you. You look forward to it. But when it becomes commonplace and you get it every day, it's not really special any longer. And now you're going to start looking for something special, meaning you might decide you need to go on a shopping spree once a week.
Right.
So it's important to treat ourselves. Absolutely. It's important to refresh our souls and feel good about ourselves and absolutely be able to spend some of the money that we're working so hard to make.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. We're on the subject. So the elephant in the room is kind of like, haven't we all become a little spoiled consumers? You know, we pretty much, because of credit cards, which is where so much of the debt comes from, we can pretty much have what we want when we want it. And so if we want to say, oh, it's only $5, $76 for a latte or a drink, or, you know, I get a donut and a coffee, and so at the end of the month I've spent $500. We kind of have gotten into these cultural habits. If we want it and we think it's small enough, then we should be able to do whatever we want to do. It used to be that way with cigarettes. You talk to people about what they were spending on a pack of cigarettes, and they would poo-poo you. Today, if you are a cigarette smoker, my Lord, you're spending upward towards $800-$900 a month on cigarettes. I think that these kind of what we call minor pleasures, you know, the smaller rewards or pleasures of life, they catch up with us, don't they?
Yes, they do. And, you know, you said something very powerful there about the elephant in the room, and it's sometimes the specialty coffee here and the $25 there, and that's a mouthful right there. Honestly, yes, people can make mistakes with money or make not the best decisions. Let me say that. Some people may not make the best decisions with money if they have a house payment way too big to in their budget, or that truck payment that's costing you $800 a month, and you know your income is $2,500 a month, you know, different things like that. But more times than not, it's not the big things that get us in our spending. It's the little foxes that spoil the vine. It's
exactly.
The $5 here. It's the ATM, 20 bucks here. I don't know about you. I mean, I don't do this any longer because I have control of my spending, but I've talked to many folks. Have you ever had money in your wallet, and at the end of the week, you look in your wallet and you think, what happened to all that money that was in my wallet? And that's because we're not being mindful of what we're spending money on. And spending money actually is supposed to be enjoyable, but it's also supposed to be a little bit of pain involved. And let me give you an example. I think about 15 years ago, Carnegie Mellon did a study on a person spending, right? So they hook up this person to an MRI machine to measure the brain waves, and they simulated this person spending with a credit card or a debit card. And when they spent with a credit card or debit card, it did not activate the pain centers of the brain. But when they simulated this person spending cash, it did activate the pain centers of the brain, because we're really supposed to feel money leave our hands. Actually, when people use a credit card when they spend rather than cash, studies show that they will spend 38% more
yeah.
than when they spend cash, because we're really mindful when we know how much cash is in our wallet. Here's a prime example, Georgiana. If you go into a grocery store and you have a debit card that you're going to spend, you know, you're going to buy your groceries with, and you start down the aisle and you're putting things in your grocery cart, by the third aisle, you're keeping a track, but by the third aisle, that just goes out the window. You don't really know how much you spend in that grocery store until the cashier rings all of it up. But if you go into that grocery store with cash, you're pretty mindful of how much you're spending, because you want to make sure you're not going to overspend what you have in your wallet.
Sure.
And you're going to come within just a few dollars of knowing how much you spent when it's all said and done with that cashier.
That is really true, because the other day I was in Whole Foods. And I had $30. That's all I had. I had $30. I had. I do something that maybe you would advise against, but it works for me. I hide money in my car. Like, I'll put it in a CD, insert or something. And so I hide money because, you know, a lot of times I walk out of the house and forget my wallet. And I got into Whole Foods, and I was counting up everything. And when I got to the register, there was 6 cents left over. And I was so proud of myself.
Yes.
I got everything, you know.
That's awesome. Give yourself a pat on the back.
I did. So you are clearly, Karen, a cash advocate. You advocate for using cash and for being far more mindful and far more aware of what we're spending, which we're going to take a break. Believe it or not, I can't believe 20 minutes has flown by. We're going to take a break, a little commercial break. We're going to come back. And when we do, let's talk about how does a person, I mean, so many of us are running around with credit cards and debit cards and checks and mortgages and car payments, and we're all like, you know, so overextended time-wise. How do we rein in the habits so that we can be present and aware and more focused on our spending? So don't go away, everybody. We will be back with Karen Ford in just a moment.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert, number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful peer presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
Talking to Karen Ford, who is the author of the number one Amazon best-selling book, Money Matters. Karen is a master financial coach, and she's giving us some master financial advice here. So, Karen, before the break, we talked about, everybody I know, especially young people today, they don't make a lot of money. They don't, most of them are living. Their rent is like more. I was reading something online. They're paying more than 63% of their income for rent. So, you know, the cost of living has not kept pace with income. So, how do we get somebody or ourselves who are all over the place, and we have to rein in our thinking and our habits and the way that we relate to money? How do you help train or how do you help coach somebody to get to that place?
Well, first of all, if your rent is that much, first of all, I feel for the young people that are having to pay so much in rent with a smaller income. However, what I want to say is search high and low and see if you can find another place to rent that is not going to be 63% of your income. Ultimately, it should. What we would like to see is 30 to 35%.
Mm-hmm.
40% is pushing it. We'd like to see that 30 to 35%. Or you may consider, if you have a friend, to have a roommate that can help curb those costs. That's a second possibility. And then third would be, you know, I don't want to see people work 80 hours a week. I don't want to work 80 hours a week to make ends meet. However, sometimes we have to do what we have to do. So if you're in a situation where you're not able to get out of that place because of a lease, you may want to consider a roommate for a short period of time just to help curb those costs. If you can find another place, or, you know, you may have to take a second job, even part-time, just to help out a little bit.
Well, Karen, I have to tell you, most of these young people, they don't have a choice. They're living, I mean, even the ones that are making $45,000, $50,000 a year, they're living five and six in a big, big apartment with separate bedrooms, and they've got student loans up the eyeballs. If they own a car, forget it. I mean, the cost of insurance and owning a car and gas and everything else. So, I mean, they're not killing it out there. They're not making big money. And I don't know one young person who has an apartment by themselves.
Right. Okay. Well, then what I would say is, first of all, list all of the debts that you have. And unfortunately, you're probably going to have to scrimp some if you're not already. You're going to have to do what you got to do. There may be some things that you're able to sell that maybe you haven't used in at least a year. That's my rule of thumb. If you haven't used something in at least a year, you know, you can sell it, you know, do something, eBay, whatever it is, to help with the cost of that. The other thing is look and see where you're spending your money. If you are just buying the necessities, meaning, you know, your rent, your gasoline, food, and utilities, but do you have a credit card? Do you go out shopping? Do you have that specialty coffee? Look and see where else you can help curb costs. Now, you touched something else there, Georgiana, is student loans. And I've got a great story for you. I coached a young lady, 31 years old, and she kept changing her major. Long story short, she ended up with over $160,000 in student loan debt because she didn't know what she wanted to do. And, of course, a lot of times when you take out a student loan, they're more than happy, more than willing to loan you more than what you need for the schooling itself. In other words, she took out extra to help pay the rent, to help buy the groceries, to help, you know, all of that. And when it was all said and done, it was $160,000 in student loan debt. She is working, but not even in the degree that she graduated with. And so she came to me to get some coaching advice. Obviously, she can't make the payments. She just can't. Her income was not there, I mean, at all. She didn't have any extra money, bells, whistles. She didn't buy extra things. And I said, what you can do is, I said, have you spoken with the student loan people? And she said, yes. And I said, what do they say? She said, I have told them I can pay, you know, $30 here or $50 there. And obviously her payments were much, much more than that. And they said, no, we can't accept the $30 or $50 payment. You have to pay the payment that we say. And she says, well, I don't have it. I don't have it to pay you. I would pay you if I could, but I don't have that amount. And so I told her the next step. I said, you know, what you can do is, I think like this, Georgiana, ask not, get not. In other words, If you're not going to ask, you're definitely not going to get it. So take the chance and ask. I said, call the student loan people and tell them, don't put them on the defense. Don't say, well, I can't pay it, and just be pointing fingers at them through the phone. You can't get blood from a turnip. No, 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 no. You don't want to take that attitude. Take the attitude, I know I have these student loans. I want to pay you, but here is my income, and I don't have it. I want to be able to pay you back, but I don't have it. Would you please work with me? Can you write any of the student loan debt off? And, of course, they say to her on the phone, we can't. And I just said, just be very kind and be very courteous and thank them and tell them that you'll continue to work on it, but at this point you don't have it to pay. And I said, you call them just, you know, every month, so they're not calling you. See, that's another thing. You don't want your debtors calling you looking for the money.
Mm-hmm.
You call them, because now, you know, now they're going to have a big paradigm shift in their thinking, oh my goodness, we're not having to call them, they're calling us. And so they're going to be more apt to help you because you're not defending yourself, you're telling them that you want to pay them. Yes, I took out this debt. Yes, you deserve your money. Yes, I want to pay you, but here's my situation. Until I'm able to pay that full payment. Well, long story short, she did that 3 months in a row. She got a letter in the mail, I kid you not. They wrote off $35,000 of that student loan debt. Now, that wasn't the whole amount of student loan debt, but hey, that's a big chunk off of
it. Yes, it is.
You ask me.
Yeah.
And so I want to tell the listeners, if you have debt, and honestly, you know, I'm not saying you're being frivolous and spending money maybe where you shouldn't be, but if you're in a situation where you truly just can't make that payment because your income just isn't there, don't just let them call you. You call them, because ask not, get not. The worst case scenario they're going to tell you is, no, you know, we can't help you. At least you tried. But she did this. I said, you call them every month. Don't have them call you. You call them. And it caused them to have favor with her. She had favor with them because she was calling them. And
yeah.
I think that's a big plus.
Wow. Well, that's a great tip. And I'm sure, isn't that what, there are companies that you can hire around your debit card debt. And they kind of do the same thing. They, you know, they have a way of, you know, contacting the credit card company and making nice and, you know, and telling them how much the person wants to pay and what have you, when they get them to negotiate. There are these companies that do that. And I assume
right.
that it's the same mentality. But how do you get those of us who, and it's really habit, we all know it's habit, and it's kind of an anxiety-based behavior. It's like, oh, I don't want to think about that right now. Just buy it. You know, I don't want to sit down and go research or find the best price. I'm just going to get it. And a lot of it is based on our anxiety or our distraction or the fact that, you know, we have something in front of us that is overwhelming us. So we're just going to grab at something that we need or want, and we're not going to take the time to be really good consumers. How do you change someone's habits who, you know, who's used to doing that?
Well, studies show that it takes 21 days to create a habit. So it's a conscientious effort. So if you're in a department store, you're somewhere and you're just thinking, ah, I just want to buy that. A rule of thumb is, let's say you put it in the cart or you have it on your arm, depending on where you're shopping. Start walking through the store. Before you go to the register, you take the 20-second rule and you look at, you hold that item in your hand and you look at it and you look at the price and you ask yourself, do I need this or do I want this? And answer that question. Is it a need or is it a want? If it's a need, well, then now you have to weigh, is it worth the price, that the tag says. If it's a want, Then the next question you want to ask is, but do I need to buy this right now? Because a lot of times what happens is buyer's remorse, or you take it home and you think, you know what, that looked better on the rack than it did than it did here at the house, or this looks better on the hanger than it does on my body, or whatever the case may be. Or it looked better in the store than on my wall here in my living room. So take the 20-second rule, hold the item up and say, is it a need or a want? And then the second question is, if it's a want, do I need it right now? Do I really want to buy it right now? And if it's a need, say, is it worth the cost? Is it worth the price that's on the tag here? And a lot of times when people will take that just 20 seconds, before they go up to the cashier to pay for it, that 20 seconds will make a huge difference, a huge difference. And that's how you create the habit, because you're going to end up with more anxiety afterwards than you did the anxiety in purchasing it.
Right. And I want to share what I call it. You know, it's a myth that needs to be debunked. For a while, I lived in a very, very affluent community. Not every single person in the town was affluent. Certainly wasn't me. But a very affluent community where there were people with a great deal of money, had a lot of money. And people would say, oh, rich people, you know, they get what they want, they buy what they want, they do what they want. And in this town, there is something called a swap shop, where you could bring things down and leave it for people, and people would bring their things down and leave it for other people. Well, one of the most darling men, he's an elderly gentleman who lived in town. We used to sit and have coffee sometimes. And he would tell the story how the richest people in the town would go down to the swap shop, and they would just delight at getting something for free rather than going out to buy it. So I really think there's a myth about rich people. And I don't know if you could contribute to this, but I think a lot of people think, oh, people are out there spending and buying and getting what they want. Why can't I, you know? I want to go out and do that. Well, people who have money very often don't spend money. And even, you know, these very wealthy people. People think that, you know, billionaires, that they're just rolling around on beds of money. But their money is so tied up and so invested and so, you know, unavailable at times. Do you want to do a little bit of demystifying about that? Because I do think a lot of people feel like a little cheated, and, you know, and they want to do what the other people do, but the other people aren't necessarily doing that, right?
I totally agree with you, Georgiana. In fact, the wealthy people, the rich people, are not buying everything that they want. They're just not doing that. In fact, they're wealthy because when they do spend, they spend it very purposeful. They don't go and just buy on a whim. No, when they spend their money, they know what they want and they know how much they want to pay for it. So they're not going to go into a store and just pull things and just, oh, I'm just going to spend this amount of money. No, it's very purposeful when they spend. I read a story one time about Warren Buffett. He lives in the same house that he bought, and I don't have that story in front of me, but I think it was in 1940 or 1950 he bought this house, and I think he paid $80,000 for it, but don't quote me on that. It wasn't a lot of money. He still lives in that house. Now, he's very wealthy. You know,
yes.
He could spend millions of dollars on a different home, but he didn't. He lives in the same house. So to debunk that thought process, I just want to say, no, rich people are not spending money on a whim, whatever they want, whenever they want. When they spend it very purposeful.
And you know what's interesting? I have a very dear friend She's a real estate agent in a very, very high end, one of the most exclusive communities in Massachusetts where I live. And she tells me, you know, it's really funny because very wealthy people who can come in and buy a house for $3 or $4 million for cash, they leverage their money. They'll take a $4 million house, but they won't pay anywhere near that. They'll talk it down to like 3,400,000 or 3,300,000. You know, they will not. They will not. Where a lot of working class, you know, white, you know, blue collar people will. They will hear an asking price, and maybe they'll try to get it down a little bit, but they're not going to try to get a deal. So one of the mentalities that I think people who are good with money is that they're always looking to get a really good price or to make a really good deal. And I learned that because one of my relatives would never buy a new car. He would always, like, go 2 or 3 years back, and he'd still have the warranty, and he'd get a low mileage, but he wasn't dealing with the depreciation, you know what I mean? And
Absolutely. He was pretty clever
about that, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the way to go if you're going to buy a car. And I know it's so tempting because you see those nice, shiny, clean new cars on that lot. And I tell people, look, if you're not going to go buy a car, and it's not in the plan, don't go to the car lots because those salespeople are trained. And they're going, before you know it, they're going to talk you into sitting in the car, and then you're going to smell that new car smell, which is no longer in your car. And then they're going to talk you into taking a test drive. And before you know it, you're going to drive off that lot with a new car. If you are not in the market for a new car, stay away from the dealerships. But if you are in the market for purchasing a different vehicle, I like your suggestion, and this is what I do. Don't buy brand new car year or 2 years or 3 years, because they'll still have a warranty on it, and you're letting somebody else take that depreciation rather than you.
Exactly.
Most millionaires don't buy brand new cars. They don't.
And you know, one of the things I learned, like when you see 40-year, you know, like late 30s, 40s, early 50-year-old men driving around, I saw somebody on the street the other day was driving the highest-end Mercedes sports car. Now, that thing's got to cost almost $200,000. And I'll be honest with you, when I look at that, I say to myself, what is that compensating for? Who needs to drive around in a $200,000 Mercedes sports car in, you know, downtown Boston? It's like, what? You know?
Yeah, I wouldn't want somebody to hit me, you know.
Exactly.
I'd rather drive my little Toyota Corolla, have money in the bank, you know. I don't want to spend $200,000 on a car because cars don't appreciate unless, you know, they're 1920, you know, or 1930s. And, you know, I'm just not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it.
I'm with you. Now, Karen, talking about appreciating, we're going to take another break. But when we come back, we're going to have about 10, 12 minutes. And you are an avid real estate investor. And you like buying and selling and flipping. And as I said at the beginning, you've even bought a house for $10 and turned it into lots and lots of equity and money. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, please share with us your money nuggets, which is, I believe, a little quote book, and tell us some of your wonderful some of your wonderful flipping stories. We'll be right back, everybody. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Karen.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
We are talking to Karen Ford, who is the author of the number one best-selling book, Money Matters. And she's a financial, master financial coach. She's a public speaker, and she has coached just dozens and hundreds and thousands of people with a whole variety of money issues. And we've been hearing some of her amazing stories. And I asked her before the break to please, in this last segment, talk to us about some of her fabulous real estate investing stories, because Karen has taken very little money and turned that very little money into a wonderful real estate investment. So, Karen, please dazzle us with your real estate stories, which are, I'm sure, are amazing.
Absolutely. Well, I'll give you a few stories. I absolutely love real estate. Real estate is a great money maker. So I want to caution folks, if you've never done it and you want to start, do your due diligence. Listen to podcasts and radio just with like Georgiana and other people and get your information so that you are well-versed in purchasing real estate and dealing with it. So I prefaced it with that. I enjoy buying houses through auctions. I enjoy buying houses through the state auditor auction and also foreclosures. And I bought a foreclosure. This was probably, here's an example, a few years ago. And it had a brand new heating system, brand new central air. And you know, those are kind of big ticket items. And I went in and I thought, ooh, we can do something with this. So we gutted the kitchen, we gutted the bathroom, we put new flooring, new walls up, put in two full bathrooms, and just made it pristine. And we listed it and we sold it for triple the amount of money that we bought it for. And that was through a foreclosed company, through foreclosure. How I bought property for $10, as low as $10, is every state in the continental United States has a state auditor office. And the state auditor office, one of the responsibilities they have is they acquire real estate properties because people didn't pay their property taxes on them for a period of time. Well, the state auditor office is not in the real estate business, so they want to get those off their books. Depending on your state, you would need to check. But in the state in which I live, they have a state auditor auction every year in every county in this state. And they post it on their website. I already know what properties are going to be auctioned, so I can do my due diligence and go see where those properties are. And in my state, they start the bidding at as low as $10. That doesn't mean you're going to get every property for that price. However, the bidding is fun. It's great to hold that card up, and then you win. If you have the winning bid, then you have the winning bid. Now, the very first time I bought a property through the state auditor auction, I didn't do my due diligence because I was excited and I was hot to buy something. So I didn't know where the properties were. And I want to caution people, don't do what I did. Check and see where the properties are. And I held my card up. I knew the vicinity of this property, but I hadn't set eyes on it, and I put my card up. Nobody bid against me. I only paid $10 for it. Well, when I finally got the deed, I thought, oh, I better go find out where you are. And it was a mobile home on a lot with a very large sign on it and a padlock, and the sign said, do not enter, this was a meth house.
Oh, God.
Oh, Lord, that's what I said. I said, oh, God, what am I going to do with this? So, you know what I did? I took pictures, I posted it on social media, because you can do that free on those yard sale sites, et cetera, and I posted, read carefully, you are buying this mobile home on this lot. Mostly you're buying the lot, but you have to remove this mobile home because it was a meth house. It is uninhabitable. It needs removed, but you're buying it as is. Long story short, I sold that. I made money, and I learned my lesson. Don't do that again. Don't do that again. Find out where these properties are before you start bidding. But I've had great successes with buying properties. And then some properties, after I get the deed, I'll go in, I'll evaluate, and I think, do I want to flip this property, or do I just want to sell it as is and let somebody else flip it? So, you know, you can gauge it. If you look at the property, the roof is intact, the windows are intact, the foundation looks okay. You can pretty much guess or assume that it's dry inside. And so I'll bid on those properties because you technically can't enter those properties until you have a deed because you don't own them yet. But you can see the vicinity. You can set eyes on the property and see what kind of condition it's in. But that is a state auditor auction is a great way to buy properties. And then there's also auction companies. Some auction companies, you can go physically to the property to bid. That's also fun. Or you can do it online. But if you do it online, it's still important that you visually look at the property, physically look at the property. Now, auction companies where you get to go to the property and bid, we had a great time. I think this was just a couple of years ago. I went to a property. It was in the middle of winter, which was actually a plus for us because it snowed so much, but they didn't cancel the auction. So when I went, it was me against one other couple, which is actually unheard of. Usually there's many, many, many people, but they had that big snow. And so it was just me and another couple. And I thought, okay, I've got a chance here. and we bid and won. I got the winning bid. Now, there's two types of auctions with auction companies. They're secured, which means the owner of that property, they want a secured amount. They want a set amount for that property. Meaning, if the highest bid wasn't that amount, then they have the option of declining it.
Right, yeah.
It was a secured auction. I got the winning bid, and it was not the amount. It was about $40,000 less than what they wanted.
But they took it. Yeah,
they took it. They took it. Yeah. And I was really grateful with that one because it had hardwood floors in it. It was a split level home, four bedrooms, living room, dining room, kitchen, two full bathrooms, family room downstairs, and it was brick on a double lot. It was phenomenal.
So did you flip it or did you?
We flipped it.
Yeah. So do you ever consider moving into one of these houses?
Well, no, because my husband and I are a little bit older, and we have our dream home, actually. We're living in our dream home, so we're not going to, fix it up for us to live in. We have our dream home, so we actually flip it to create a profit for ourselves, but also to put another person in that property, because we usually sell it for not market price. It'll be a little bit lower than market price. It's more affordable to people so that we can sell it more quickly.
I was just going to say, yeah, you drop it. You know what the asking is, and you drop it down $20,000-$30,000, and you're able to get rid of it, right, pretty quickly.
Right. Yeah, that way we get to the closing table much more quickly. Mm-hmm.
So needless to say, you are a gal who understands money, knows how to make it, and you are actively in the business of doing so. Now, is your husband in the same business you're in? Do you work together, or is he in a different field?
He is in a different field, but he is a silent partner in our business with real estate. He says, go for it. Just do it, And so he's kind of like my cheerleader in that. Obviously, yeah. If he says don't do it, I say, okay. But hands-on, I'm more the hands-on person when it comes to real estate. But he says yes or no or do it. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we are at the end of this program, but let's talk about your book. Tell us about your book, where people can get it, and how they can get in touch with you.
Certainly. Well, they can get in touch with me, and they can also get my book on my website, which is KarenFord.org, or they can also purchase the book Money Matters on Amazon. All of my books are on Amazon, and as we know, Amazon is worldwide. So those are the two locations.
Okay, and what is your website?
KarenFord.org.
KarenFord.org. You want to check out Karen's book. You want to contact her if you want to be coached into how to be really conscious of money and learn how to use it well. Karen, what a delightful show. I've loved all your stories and your information, and how fantastic that you've made this a great success. And I'm sure that you are excellent at coaching other people as well. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much, Georgiana. My pleasure.
And listeners, don't forget to join us again next week for another informational and interesting program here on Living Above the Drama.